Ascending to the seat of the Khilafah in 1876, Sultan Abdul Hamid II continued a path of reforming the Ottoman state whilst also realigning it with its Islamic identity.
Abdul Hamid had an interesting problem because he lost a lot of the Balkans, and so the only thing that was left was Turkey and the Arab provinces. What he did is he had this situation of Ummah. How does the Ummah work? You have Ummah in the domains, you have Ummah outside of the domains, and you have Ummah that have lands that have just been lost. What do I do now? So what you see in this period is even the idea of Ummah starts to become complicated in the minds of the Ottomans. Does Abdul Hamid as a caliph have any jurisdiction, any authority over Muslims outside of the domains? And this starts to become a debate, yes or no? Can he help Muslims outside the domains? And what should his help be? And then what should be the interesting question is what is the requirements for Muslims outside? So Muslims in India, what can they ask for? What can they ask for from the caliph who they don't live under? Can they say, give us A, B, C, D? And if he doesn't give it, is he a bad caliph? This is now the situation, right? So Muslims in India were colonized by the British. They wanted Abdul Hamid to send an army to take them out. He says, I can't do that. My army's first lot strong enough, the domains is really big, and I have to get through Iran. How's this going to work? But I can send you money. How's that? Now here, what happens is Muslims today become very, they start using today's morality to judge that past. That was unacceptable. Why couldn't he do that? But here's the complexity. The domains are moving, and he has to make a sense of what it means in this sense. And so what he does is he uses these policies, he uses them very well.
A significant theme of that era was constitutionalism. Elements within the political sphere sought to transform the nature of a caliph to one that would be regulated by a popularly drafted constitution. Sultan Abdul Hamid initially acceded to those requests, and a constitution was adopted in 1876. However, as he saw Ottoman territory shrinking and the way a constitution and parliamentary system was hampering decisive decision-making, he suspended the constitution in 1878. At the same time, dissident groups had begun to mobilize as secret societies against the Sultan under the veneer of seeking a constitutional system, whilst harboring more insidious designs against the Khilafah as a whole. These groups came to be known as the Young Turks and were inspired by other similar movements that sprung up across Europe, such as Young Italy, Young Germany, and Young Islanders. From this came the so-called Committee of Union and Progress, or CUP, which was founded in 1889 at the Imperial Military School of Medicine in Constantinople. The organization aligned itself with the Young Turks movement as they called for a reinstatement of the constitution, which would be achieved by overthrowing Abdul Hamid II for one of his brothers, either future Sultan Muhammad V or former Sultan Murad V. The movement established newspapers and utilized this medium to spread anti-Khilafah propaganda. Otherwise, it operated clandestinely and expanded in a short period of time by infiltrating positions in military schools and the army. When the subversive activities of this group were revealed in 1896, some members were arrested, whilst many fled to Paris, London, Geneva, Bucharest, and British-occupied Egypt. A year later, the headquarters of the movement shifted to Geneva. From here, the CUP continued agitating against Sultan Abdul Hamid and were abetted with financial assistance by some of the host European nations. Things were to get a whole lot more serious for the Khalif. In 1905, he was to face an assassination attempt as he was leaving the Yildiz Mosque after Jummah. The Sultan was destined to survive, but the incident underscored how the knives were out for the righteous Khalif. In 1908, the Young Turks embarked on a campaign of assassinations and instigated a rebellion. There were threats to also invade the Sultan's capital. Considering the dynamics, Sultan Abdul Hamid announced that he would reinstate the previously suspended constitution. An atmosphere of constitutionalism fostered division of the Ottoman Khilafah and was favored by the Europeans. Nonetheless, Sultan Abdul Hamid understood that he did not have many other options at the time. His pragmatic stance reflects the views of the last Sheikh al-Islam of the Ottoman Empire, Mustafa Sabri Effendi.
People like Mustafa Sabri, who is quite an ideologue in that context, his belief is that constitutionalism is the best way to save empire. Okay, by having a more inclusive political structure, it's the best way of saving empire because more voices can be heard. And to have a political structure that doesn't listen to outside voices is problematic. While it can save the empire to a certain degree, it's not a diverse empire in that context.
The new constitutional era opened the way to elections and the resumption of parliamentary politics. Again, whilst the Young Turk-inspired Committee of Union and Progress members were instrumental in these developments, ulama were not absent as they stood for elections and had their voices heard in moulding the constitution. Facing the challenges the Khilafah had at that time, they tried to chart a course to be able to make the constitution compatible with Shari'i principles.
A lot of members who were elected in the Ottoman Parliament are members of the ulama. Why they've been elected? What's happening here? 66 members of the ulama, from what I found, were elected in the Ottoman Parliament of a number of about 260. That may not sound like a lot, but it's in key provincial areas, key cities. And when the elections are taking place, for example, in Istanbul, the second highest elected member was an alim himself. Okay, so you're starting to see that the ulama are seen as important in this context. And if we look at the terminology of the constitutional amendments, it's very clear that all the terminology that's being used are Islamic, because the drafting committee of the constitutional amendments in 1909, the main practitioners are all ulama. Mustafa Sabri, Hamdi Yazar, Mustafa Asim. So when you look at these people, it's still being given to the ulama to look at the constitution. The constitution is called Qanun al-Asasi, in itself the fundamental law. So it's being perceived within the Islamic framework. So when you see all this terminology, one has to ask themselves the question that why is it then that this narrative is still being pushed of the revolution of 1908, the constitutional practices of late Ottoman Empire, the counter-revolution to a certain degree, is still seen within the binary of secular and religious, when in actuality the blur is far more harder to distinguish from.
But the new arrangement was not to last long. The Young Turks had made it known that their target was Sultan Abdul Hamid himself. Their demands for a constitutional Khilafah were only the vehicle. A new rebellion brewed and the Sultan's palace was besieged. Sultan Abdul Hamid by this stage had ruled the Ummah for 33 years. He felt the need for no further complications. Instead of retaliating, he rather chose to step aside, in a way echoing the approach in former times of Sayyidina Uthman radiallahu an, when faced by the rebels. "I do not want to hurt anybody," he said. "I am the Khalif of Islam. I will not have a Muslim fight against another Muslim." A spurious fatwa was prepared to formalize his dethronement. Because of the esteemed position of the Khilafah, the agitators still deemed a religious edict to be imperative. When a delegation presented the fatwa to him, informing him of his deposing and claiming faults with his leadership, Sultan Abdul Hamid lamented, "By Allah, I am not guilty. My efforts are evident. I will not mention them, but they will be recorded in history. After all my mercy and good intentions, I encounter insults. This is, however, what has been destined for me. Even in this incident, I strove to avoid bloodshed. I tried. What can I do? O Allah, protect my Ummah. All I can say is damn those who caused this evil." The 33-year rule of Sultan Abdul Hamid thus abruptly ended on the 27th of April 1909. His brother Muhammad Rashid Effendi was proclaimed the new Sultan whilst he was taken into custody and exiled to Salonika in present-day Greece. He was expressed away in the middle of the night together with his family and an odd few suitcases. His personal belongings in Istanbul were looted. In Salonika, he was assigned to the Alatini Pavilion, which was a beautiful building, but which effectively was turned into a prison. The Sultan was under a kind of house arrest. Any news of the outside world was off limits to him. The Sultan's daughter, Aisha, described the family's first day in Salonika, where they were thrust into a large empty hall and the building's doors were shut behind them. What were we going to do now? What would happen? How would we live in this house? She recounted. We would live here, maybe die here. The family put up a strong front to give support to their father. Yesterday he was the Sultan. Today he was a prisoner. Sitting awkwardly in totally unfamiliar settings, they tried to make some plans to eat and sleep. There was no soap. There were no candles, said Aisha. The family was hungry. There was no cutlery and glassware. Gradually, the Sultan adapted to his new reality. He transformed the first floor of the building into a carpenter's workshop and practiced his skill. Now deposed, Sultan Abdul Hamid stayed in Salonika for 3.5 years. After this, he was brought back to the Beylerbeyi Palace in Istanbul, where he stayed until his demise in 1918. Certain conditions of imprisonment were relaxed in Istanbul, and the former Sultan did receive some visitors. When he received news of the unraveling Muslim Empire, he reportedly said, I prefer to go under the soil and die than see Istanbul, the apple of our eye and the center of our state, which was liberated by Sultan Muhammad al-Fatih, come under occupation. Sultan Abdul Hamid II passed away on February the 10th, 1918, at the age of 78. He was shrouded at the Topkapi Palace, and his wish of having part of the Ghilaf of the Kaaba as his kafan was granted. He was buried at the resting place of Sultan Mahmud II in downtown Istanbul, lowered into his grave to chants of the Takbir.
When he passes away, it's really fascinating. The people that deposed him from power felt so guilty that they were part of the procession. Some of them even held his coffin. They were like, what did we do there?
A member of the CUP was instrumental in the ousting of the Sultan, later lamented. We are sinners. May Allah forgive us. We committed murders. We overthrew Sultan Abdul Hamid and looted his palace. May Allah forgive us. Our sin is great.